Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. Once again, The Local Take is joining forces with PNC Bank for their Black History Month programming. This year's theme is Atlanta's African Americans Building Living Legacies. They're honoring Mr. Egbert Perry of the Integral Group, and he has joined me in the studio this morning. Egbert Perry, welcome to The Local Take.
Good morning. Well, thank you.
Thanks so much for coming out. I wanted to ask you to share with our listeners how you came to be an entrepreneur in community development, and also can you share exactly what community development is?
Okay. I'd be happy to do that. Let me say, first of all, I appreciate being here this morning. I always felt I would be an entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur. I grew up not the same kind of business, obviously, but I grew up in a business where you did whatever you did, you needed to do to hustle, to make a living. And my father fed 11 kids and my mother and himself. So it seemed like the way to be. So I always figured that at some point I will own a business. That being said, I was fortunate along the way. I left home and came to this country to finish my last 2 years of high school. And after high school, went to college, got a degree in engineering and business and so on, and came to Atlanta in 1980 and worked for H.J. Russell & Company. And I was there for 13 years. And I think during that time, I built a lot of buildings and developed a few projects, but along the way, saw an urban environment where a lot of people that looked like me were really sort of sentenced to less than the best options in life, and felt that a lot of it was because not only race, but class. So there was a desire in me to try and do something that would impact people's opportunities and would be agnostic to person's income. So regardless of your income, perhaps you'd have access to a decent education, decent living environment, and so on. And so that sort of evolved over time and eventually led me to leaving Russell and starting the Integral Group with an eye towards revitalizing urban communities. Specifically, you asked me what community development is, and I would say if you think about the adjective community, it's about building community. And so what are all the things that people want to say they have access to if they live in a healthy community? And it's really very simple. If you ask 100 people, you'd probably get answers that look almost exactly the same for everyone. Decent housing, decent school, retail goods and services, access to jobs, transportation, and so on. And so the whole idea is, how do you create communities where people with choice would want to live, but make it available to people across all incomes? For me, that's what community development is. It's creating places where people can commune.
I like that you said community as an adjective.
Right.
And I think you're right. I think in the human experience that we sometimes forget, we all share so many of the same desires for living. Mm-hmm. Before we move forward, tell me where you came from to finish those last 2 years of high school in the U.S.
I'm a transplanted immigrant from the island of Antigua in the Eastern Caribbean.
A small island.
Yes. I often said, now that the Georgia Dome doesn't stand anymore, it doesn't have as much resonance to some people, but I used to say you could take everybody from Antigua, put them in the Georgia Dome, and there'll still be 10,000 empty seats, because it was a 60,000 person country back when I was there, when I left home in 1970.
That is a small country. Moving forward, you conquered Russell, you conquered the Integral Group Online, known for community development. The economic downturn occurred in 2008, and while for a lot of us that seems like yesterday, it was over 10 years ago. And at that time, you were asked to lead Fannie Mae. When that happened, what were your thoughts? What did you think about that opportunity, and how did that opportunity come to you?
So let me clarify something there. So I didn't really lead Fannie Mae. I was on the board, so I was asked to serve on the board, and I joined the board in, December 2008. I was on the board for 10 years. The last five of those 10 years, I was chairman of the board, but I would say there were 10 other board members that did as much or almost as much as I did. And there were certainly some outstanding leaders in the form of the CEO and the leadership team that actually ran the business every day. So I don't want to step on their contribution because they're really the ones who did it. I provided leadership at the board level of the institution.
And at that time in December 2008, everyone looking thought that Freddie and Fannie Mae were both going to to disappear.
Yeah,
that they were no longer going to be able to exist.
Yes, you're correct. There was a sense that they're called GSEs. The GSEs were going to crash and take the entire economy with them. And quite frankly, the global economy was in a very, very, very fragile state. And if you think of Fannie Mae as the largest financial institution in the country, maybe the world, with assets of over $3.2 trillion, it was not an insignificant concern. I mean, there truly was a real fear that we were going to be in free fall and the economy was going to collapse. And it was close, quite frankly, because there was contagion. What Fannie and Freddie do every day has an impact on the entire U.S. economy, and because of how widely its securities trade around the world, it actually was an integration of those tools into the financial makeup of sovereigns around the world, governments and other countries' assets around the world. So huge risk at the time. I was asked by the chair of the board, the first chair that was picked by the Secretary of the Treasury, to come in and help with the fixing of Fannie Mae and the bailing out of the institution. And I was one of those 10 board members asked initially. So that's how I got on the board. And I'm not sure where they picked my name from, but somebody thought I should be joining the board. And so I was asked, and I accepted.
And I know a lot of folks, they hear Fannie Mae, they hear Freddie Mac, you call them GSEs.
Mm-hmm.
You've explained why they are important,
yes,
and why we needed to make sure that they did not fall, that their demise didn't come. But can you explain just a little bit about why we all should understand this and know that this is important, and that what you guys did really was kind of save the global economy? Everything took it was like a deep breath, but we were finally able to exhale.
Yeah, it's always amazed me. I went in there thinking I knew what Fannie and Freddie did. I really didn't. Intellectually, you kind of think you do, but really it's simple to explain now. But I probably couldn't have done a good job of it back in the day, 10 years ago. If you think about it, somebody goes into a bank or a mortgage company to try and get a mortgage for a house. That's called originating the mortgage. So the mortgage is originated by someone. That party that issues the mortgage is in effect giving you the resources to buy the house. And they do that over and over. They do it for John, Mary, Jane, Peter, Tom, whatever. And eventually, they couldn't do it anymore because they have no more money to give to you so you can buy the house. So somebody needs to be able to replenish those dollars so that that bank or mortgage company can keep doing this. So what they do is turn around and sell it to somebody who will actually take that mortgage, and by that person buying that mortgage from the bank now has the money to do it all over again. The originator is the front end, the primary market. The parties who buy those mortgages are the secondary market. And that's what Fannie and Freddie are. So the way in which mortgages continue to be able to be issued is very much dependent on the ability of some organization, Fannie, Freddie, to buy the mortgages from the originators of those mortgages. Now, one could ask, well, where do Fannie and Freddie get their money from to keep being able to just indefinitely buy mortgages? What they do is, after there are enough mortgages, let's say they now have 10,000 mortgages that they've bought, and pick a number, but let's just, in fact, for simplicity, let's just say it's $1 billion of mortgages that they've bought. They then bundle all of those mortgages into a security, something that someone can invest in. They guarantee that that security is going to pay X percent every 6 months. And they take that security to the market, and people buy the security because they consider Fannie and Freddie's guarantee to be almost like the federal government's guarantee. And therefore, they buy that, and it's better than just having cash, which you earn nothing on. But if you can have a security that's almost like cash, then they'll invest in it. So all of these people that are buying the securities of Fannie and Freddie are, in effect, providing the cash that allows Fannie and Freddie to turn around and continue to buy the mortgages and so on. So absent that mechanism, you do not have the liquidity in the market to keep mortgages being issued. And it's a huge, huge business. And just about every country, every bank, one of the assets they hold in their balance sheet as almost cash are the GSE agency securities, Fannie and Freddie securities.
So there is no way you guys could have let this fail.
Oh, no.
It would have, the Great Recession would have immediately turned into the Great Depression.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, Mr. Perry, whenever I say your name to someone or I hear someone say your name, almost the next sentence is, oh yeah, he's the guy that's developing the old plant in Doraville.
Yes.
Can you just share a little bit about what that means and where the development stands?
So there's that old, it's the Doraville General Motors Assembly Plant, and it was a GM plant from 1947 till it shuttered in 2008. And I and my partners decided to buy it back in 2014. To redevelop a little city within the city of Doraville. The attraction was that it was on transit. It had two entrance or exits from 285. So it had access to the highway. The Doraville station was there, and a half mile down the street was the Chambly station. So it had two MARTA stations. It was 2 miles from Peachtree to Cabia Port, and it was 165 acres with 90 acres of buildings on the site. But it was attractive locationally, and it seemed like a good idea at the time to acquire the site. It had a lot of potential, and so we bought it. We demolished and recycled about 106,000 tons of material, and we're in the midst now of redeveloping it. We had it master planned into a new mini city, and we're in the early stages of doing that work. We've built 3 buildings on the site so far, and we're getting ready to start a wave of residential and retail and other uses on the site later this year.
Now, as I mentioned earlier, PNC Bank is honoring Atlanta's African Americans who are building living legacies. And you're being recognized. What does building a legacy mean to you? And as you're building it, do you build with the conscientious effort of building a legacy, or does the legacy stand on what you're doing?
I would like to think it's the latter. I don't get up every day saying, okay, I want to build a legacy. I think what I get up every day and I want to make a difference. I do the work I do because I think it's impactful. It creates opportunities often for people who would not otherwise have been able to access certain of the things that are offered in communities we develop. And so I just go about doing the work we do, and the 300 people at Integral do the same every day, and that's what we do. And if at the end of it all, somebody looks back and says, well, that was a job well done, or we appreciate the contributions, then so be it. But I can't say I ever spend time thinking about legacy building.
Well, we've got to mention that you built this building that our studio is in, and so I love that we're part of the legacy of of Mr. Perry.
Well, let me clarify. I was the H.J. Russell and Company in 1980, and the first project I worked on, I was the project manager for this building, and so.
I think that is just fabulous. For all of the real estate developers out there, or the wannabe real estate developers out there, they're looking at flipping shows. You know, they've bought their first property and they're dreaming of being, you know, a community developer. What advice do you share? What can you tell those, you know, young hustlers, so to speak, that are out there trying to become you?
First thing I'll tell them is don't try to become me. They should shoot for higher than that. But, you know, the thing is, in any industry, no matter what it is, and real estate just happens to be one of them, or community development, you should be doing what you're driven to do, what you're passionate about. And when it all gets down to it, things have to make sense. You know, a lot of times we get seduced by a piece of real estate. I always say never fall in love with a piece of real estate, because that's what it is, a piece of real estate. It's what you can do with it and how you can impact people by what you do on that real estate that should matter. Now, I realize that that may be a touchy subject for people, because especially with the history we have in this country, I mean, some pieces of dirt are more special than others. And so I don't mean to diminish or devalue that. But when it's all said and done, you do real estate or community development for a purpose. And hopefully the purpose is not just to make some money. If it's just to make some money, when the economy goes south, you'll look for the next thing to do. If the economy goes south and you're driven by passion, it just means, okay, I have a bump in the road, but I'm going to be fine. And you just keep on plugging, because you're in it for a purpose that's higher than just making a buck. And so I would say, make sure it's your passion if that's what you set out to do.
I love it. Be passionate, shoot higher. Right. And I think you mentioned with the GM factory, location, location, location.
Absolutely, positively.
Now, did you imagine this life? Did you dream that you would be this captain of industry? And how does it feel to be honored for your life's work?
I have mixed messages in there. Let me start off and clear up one. So I'm not sure what a captain of industry is. We've worked on some important projects, and we've had successes. We've also had failures, or some that didn't work out quite as well as we would have liked. So maybe if captain of industry means that you've been around so long and still standing, and therefore you get recognized for that, then okay, I'm a captain of industry, because I've been around. I'm running out of runway now, but I've been around a long time. I don't know that I just dreamed of doing what I'm doing. I decided I was going to do this work. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people do revisionist history, and they try to make it seem as though, well, I was 10 years old and I had this great dream and I decided this, that, and the other. With few exceptions, that's really a lie. You just worked your way through doing whatever it is you do. And if you happen to do it well enough, long enough, you get recognized. And I think that's the case with me. You asked me what was the last part of the question.
How does it feel to be honored for your life's work?
Well, you know, sometimes I think, does that mean that people think I'm going to be gone tomorrow? So is this just before I hit the grave? I hope not. I hope I have a few more years left. But it's flattering, and you can, it would be disingenuous to not acknowledge that when somebody says, I really like the work you do or what you have done or whatever your contribution, how can you not be flattered by that? But it doesn't go to my head too much, because I'm way short of where I had hoped I would be in life in terms of impact created. And so I'm still in a race against time to try and get more done sooner.
Mr. Perry, I wish there were more people in that race with you, but I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing just a little bit of your life story and some history of your accomplishments with our listeners today. And you will be sharing more on February 20th at the PNC Bank Black History Month program at the Center for Civil and Human Rights. And people can get more information at Eventbrite.
You're more than welcome. Thank you.